Well, hey guys, this is Joey and Ray with Senior Marketing Specialists, and this is A Human Connection. I have been extraordinarily blessed over my career to meet some really fascinating and successful people, and I get to now bring those conversations to you. So I hope that we can all learn and grow from each other. I hope you enjoy. I should have known when I sat down with Dan McNerney a few months ago, I think you were one of the first people, if not the first, to join the Human Connection podcast. I should have known at the time that 30 minutes was not going to be long enough to give everybody a real glimpse at you, Dan. And for those that don't know a little bit of your bio, you can start there. But I think what we covered last time was your background, your upbringing. You talked a lot about your parents and what you learned from a work ethic standpoint from a very young age and all the entrepreneurial things that you did before forming this beautiful company that now so many people call home. So today, what I think I'd like to do is talk about those company years of what was it like from your vantage point. You are such an icon in the industry. How did you weigh the heavy load of being a good dad, a good husband, a good company leader, and being out in the world so much at every event, at every conference? So we can kind of hit all of those, but again, want to dig deep into what makes Dan McNerney tick. But again, ladies and gentlemen, for everybody, my mentor, one of my favorite humans, the person that gave me every opportunity that I have to have been what level of success I've had in my career, founder of our company, Dan McNerney.
Good morning.
Good morning. I like the hats.
We're
representing. We are representing. We'll get to that chapter too.
The hair and makeup people couldn't make it in, so I had to cover up my hair.
That is a struggle. When you retire, you lose some of your people, don't you? I had 10 people around me this morning trying to get me ready. So let's do kind of go a little bit down memory lane, Dan. In the first time that we sat down a few months ago, you were gracious enough to kind of walk us through kind of what makes you tick. What were some of the grounding lessons that you learned very early in life, many from your parents and from other mentors like Larry Byrnes, like Chuck Tantillo that you mentioned in the earlier one. So let's jump right to running this company from a small organization in a small town in Missouri to literally being one of the, powerhouses, if we can say that about ourselves, one very respected in our industry throughout the whole industry. So what kind of walk us through the beginning years and maybe where some things went awry and how you got things back on track. But just would love to hear any version of that from you.
Yeah. And, you know, as you said, we went through some of the background on the last one, so I'll try not to repeat and re-say a lot of that, but maybe picking up where last time we talked even about, you know, early childhood and growing up and mom and dad and their influence and all of that, maybe, you know, picking it up more when I started with the company, the last thing in the world I ever thought I would do is sell insurance because even though a lot of people don't know it, I'm actually pretty introverted, kind of shy and don't like to, now I guess that's changed a little bit. But anyway, so when I started out, I think the thing that gave me the confidence that I could do that, I always thought being a salesperson was just kind of, you know, ad lib it and talk about this or that. And when Larry Byrnes, the original founder of where our company started, he set me down and he said, no, we have a set system. And if you will learn that system all the way from how do you walk up to the front door? What do you say at the front door? How do you introduce yourself? Then there was in our agency, a memorized presentation that gave me the confidence. I thought, well, I don't have to just go in and be a fast talker, or whatever. I can learn this system. I can follow these guidelines and have success. And luckily, it did. You know, system never works all the time. You know, if you have something that works all the time, you're probably not setting your goals high enough. But yeah. So I started out, we were a small agency, five agents, one, what was called back in those days, one secretary. And that was in 1979. Throughout the 90s, we continued to be based out of, throughout the 80s, I should say, we continued to be based out of our home that was Trenton, Missouri at that time, and building our company throughout the 80s, strictly in one channel only. We'll wait and talk about that a little bit later, but now currently we have our two big entities being SBS, our career group, and then of course SMS, our brokerage agents and independent agents that we work with. So throughout the 80s, I found early on that I was blessed and lucky to be able to go out and knock on doors and kind of establish that rapport and did well in personal sales. But I quickly learned that there's only so many, you know, we all only have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 and one quarter days each time. So I found out that by sharing success with other agents and sharing with those that were brand new to the business to be able to help them, I wanted to help them concentrate on how to be more successful in selling, how to earn more income. And I quickly learned that, you know, there's, again, only 24/7, 365 days, but there's no limit to the number of people that I can work with. And then, you know, maybe that then, I don't want to jump ahead, but can that started with SBS. And then maybe here in a few minutes, we'll get to how that rolled over into SMS. But that was really the 80s in a nutshell, was establishing my own confidence and success in my selling, and then starting that growth of helping others.
So I love the fact that you, Dan McNerney, called yourself an introvert starting out in this. I would not describe you that way, but that's very typical of a lot of times people who are in the spotlight. And sometimes in sales, you feel like it's kind of a spotlight on you, that is almost a persona that you kind of create and can be that person that you need to be in that spotlight. But yet maybe in your day-to-day life, you know, would much rather be away from crowds, away from all of that. But do you feel like if you labeled yourself as an introvert starting out, do you feel like that confidence kind of grew as you were able to put yourself in more of those situations versus just maybe staying away because you didn't want to go?
No, a great question. And, quick story. So I had been with the agency a very short period of time, and they were having their annual awards banquet. Now, you got to remember, the whole room full of people was probably maybe 20, 25 people, yeah. Four or five agents and some staff members and this and that. But I remember that Larry Barnes said, we're going to go around the room and everybody can stand up and just introduce themselves, who you are, where you're from, and, you know, any comment you might want to make. Well, I thought, oh my God, I can't stand up in front of a group of people and say that. And then I went around one table and then another, and I just kept getting more and more nervous. By the time I thought I was going to pass out.
Yeah.
Now, this is just to stand up in front of 25 people and say, hi, I'm Dan McNerney. By the time it got to me, I did stand up. I was able to get my name out, but my voice was shaking. So I thought, okay, I'd been there, you know, several months by then. I thought, if I'm going to have success in this career, it's going to involve, you know, talking with groups, talking with people and this and that. So I went, don't know why I thought of this or how or divine intervention or whatever, but I went to Larry Barnes the next week and I said, you know, I was so nervous the other night, but, you know, I want to take this pathway. I want you, if you would, anytime you have a situation where you need a speaker or a presenter or someone to stand up in front of the group, just know that I volunteer for that.
Wow.
So he did. And each time it got a little bit easier and a little bit easier and a little bit easier. Even to this day, though, 40 some years later, I wouldn't say I get, like, if you and I would hit the road as we used to and do agent seminars with 100 people, 200 people in a room, I wouldn't say that I would be, you're always a little bit anxious. They say, a professional basketball player, football player, it's the same way. There's a little bit of anticipation. But so anyway, I guess I was lucky enough to take that and go to Larry and say, give me every opportunity to speak.
So two things that I get out of that I know every person listening will get out of that is the word comfort zone gets used a lot. There's all sorts of charts and graphs and motivational books written about you got to get outside of that comfort zone. That's where the good stuff happens. And I think that's the exact story right there of that was not comfortable for you. That was not fun for you. That was probably something, like you said, with each person, your palms were getting sweatier and sweatier. And then I'm surprised you even remembered your name, because I've been in those situations where I'm like, words won't even come out, let alone trying to remember something profound to say. So I love that. That's a true human, real world example of somebody that went outside their comfort zone. And I love, and again, I hope everybody that's listening gets the part that is most impressive out of all of that is you went to Larry and admitted your uncomfortableness and your weakness, people might call that in those days. And you said, I want to get better. I can tell you as a leader, there would be nothing more that I love than if somebody would come to me and say those things, right? Mm-hmm. You've been on both sides. You've been that person. I have too. And you've been that person that people came to and said, I'm not comfortable, or I'm not sure this X fill in the blank is for me, but help me get there. I mean, that's huge. That's what we want our kids. That's what we try to teach them. That's what you want to make sure that everybody understands. And I've heard you say this a million times of, you don't just wake up and be Dan McNerney.
Yeah.
When you're going 100 miles an hour and presenting and people listening and needing your attention at every angle, and your positivity and your glass half full approach to life and your happiness and joy, that doesn't just exude when you wake up, right? I mean, there's some work to getting to that point, right?
Oh, yeah. You want me to speak on that for a minute?
Yeah, please. Yeah. So, any secrets?
Again, so we won't go all the way back to what we covered last time, but I'm blessed and lucky to have parents. My mom's still alive. She'll be 92 years old this year, but just went down and saw her in Florida. Dad passed away 3 years ago, but to have both of them, and I, being the, and I don't even know if entrepreneur was a word back in those days, but being the entrepreneurs that they were in the restaurant business, in the service station, I observe, they always say, show me better what you, I see what you do more than what you say. To watch them, anytime your parents were farmers and school teacher. And so anytime you're out doing that, there's going to be ups and downs, and observing how, even in those down times, how they reacted and responded to that. So I had that, I was lucky to have that great foundation that they laid. And then when I started selling, I had never heard of a motivational speaker or a self-help or whatever you might want to call. And as you know, Zig Ziglar, and a lot of the people on the line know that somehow, I started to say somehow or another, I know exactly where that came from. Larry Barnes was, matter of fact, he used to, before he started selling insurance, he sold motivational tapes and self-help programs.
I did not know that. I learned something. I did not know.
Nowadays, you can look at 10,000 different podcasts and this and that. Back in those days, there was about, there was Zig Ziglar and Dennis Waitley and Tony Robbins and, a very small handful. But anyway, so Larry impressed upon us the importance of, taking daily time to read that Zig Ziglar book or listen to the recording or whatever. And so I was lucky again and fortunate to see the importance of that to And it's still tough. Listen, the people that are listening, that just because you happen to listen to that magical podcast and you get all fired up and you're ready and you're set, but there's still tough days. Mm-hmm. I tell people, you know, we're in sales. So in the ideal world, we would sell a person we sit down across from, right? No, because what happens if everybody we talk to buys, they don't need us anymore.
Right.
You know, a good salesperson is someone who has the attitude to, even after they've heard that word no and have had that door shut in their face, you know, 5 times in a row, 10 times in a row, that you keep on going and you keep persisting. So, So I would say those two things, my background that I built upon, and then continuing to commit to learning how to be better. And then as I got more into a leadership position, not only for me to be better, but to help others be better, to help mm-hmm. them, you know, keep a better attitude and keep gaining more and more success.
Yeah, that's cool. I had never heard that about Larry. That's very cool. That the founder of what started all of this actually started off in motivational books. That's very fitting, actually. If you tie a bow around that, that's kind of it makes sense that that's kind of in our blood, if you will. That not just having the skill set, but having the mindset of what it is that we do, of whether you're in sales, marketing, operations, it doesn't matter. This company, the foundation is the same. So that's very cool. I love that story. So you mentioned Don and Daryl again. I know we talked a lot about your upbringing in the other one, but I can never hear Donna's name without thinking of, you know, that's a good segue maybe into starting Senior Marketing Specialist in 1994 was when we first heard this term called FMO. So I love the story I always share about Donna and Daryl, but we have lots of Donna-isms around here still that she hasn't been here on a day-to-day basis for several years. So many of the people like Allie you just met and many of the other team here probably never got the opportunity to work with Donna, or maybe hasn't even met her, but know all the Donna-isms and all the characteristics that we talk about that Donna laid the foundation for sure. But so let's kind of jump ahead then. So you started out as an agent, became obviously successful doing that, started building the career agency, senior benefit. Well, at that time, the Larry D. Barnes and Barnes Insurance Group through the different transitions of names. To what we know now as Senior Benefit Services, which is on fire. If you haven't heard, by the way, there's a lot of really, really, really amazing things happening on the career side of our company that from a growth standpoint and from a leadership standpoint and from a connecting standpoint, it's been a lot of fun to watch for sure, for Clint to kind of take those agents by the reins and build that division up over the last few years. So like we said earlier, it was 1994 when you got the call from Peter Nauert, who, again, I always have to give somewhat credit to. I'm a firm believer. I think you taught me this. Anthony Chapman taught me this. He says it every time he's in front of anybody, that if you've had success in this business, in this industry, remember who brought you here. Remember who brought you to the table and who gave you those first opportunities. And if you're lucky enough, they're still here to thank them. If they're not still here, to keep mentioning their name. And I would say Peter Nauert would be one of those that, although he maybe didn't know me personally, certainly by creating this model of an FMO and choosing our organization to be one of, what was there, 5 people maybe called to?
I think in the beginning, either 5 or 6.
To take this thing called FMO distribution out to the senior market, which really hadn't been there before. So walk us through your memory of those first few years, Dan, of building SMS.
Yeah, so a couple of things. SBS, let me take one step backwards. In 1989, myself, along with a financial partner, I kind of had the sweat equity. He had the money equity, Charles or Chuck Tantello, as we know him. So in 1989, we were able to buy out the founder of the company, Larry Barnes, and simultaneous with that, we made a move from Trenton, Missouri to Columbia, Missouri. So for in the early 90s, we had been lucky enough and fortunate enough to build one of the very largest captive career organizations in the country. In addition to this opportunity that you talked about, I had been thinking about what just seemed like we were missing out, that we didn't have the full range of what we could be doing, meaning the whole mm-hmm. independent agent side of the business. And when I would go to the meetings with those other five or six people, the Mike Greenhills, the Mark Gillums, the Shep Cutlers, the, you know, Jim Mears, right on down the line, I was always intrigued with what they, now we were lucky because we had something very valuable in a career agency that not right. a whole lot of other people did. And right. people like Peter Nauert really liked that because of the additional, you know, for lack of a better word, control you had over mm-hmm. what your agents were able to do and what company they represented and this and that. So I had already been thinking about that. And then it was kind of like this fell in our lap from Peter Nauert, who, by the way, yes, I agree, is one of the, a lot of people are lucky to have one or two real meaningful mentors. Mm-hmm. I had, four or five, already mom and dad, number one, Larry Barnes, Chuck Tantillo, Peter Nauert, Mike White. So when Peter came along and said, hey, we're going to split up these territories, we're going to have FMOs, you guys are going to have, if I remember right, Joanne, it was Missouri, Kansas, yes. Iowa, and Nebraska?
I think maybe, or Illinois, I can't remember.
Yeah. So, and, you know, it was 1994, we're starting from scratch. I went to Joanne Ray and said, she had been with our company, you had been with our company 3 or 4 years at that point in time, and it had proven to be a tremendous asset, a great communicator, a great attitude, you know. So, again, I'm condensing a very long story here, but Joanne and I got together. We talked about what this could be. I made the offer to Joanne to start up and run this new organization. Mom and Dad were probably the first two people to help in that division. But yeah, it was, I don't want to go too long here, but it was just an extension of what we were already doing. We already had the success and the knowledge and the systems that we had so much success with throughout the 80s with our career group. Joanne and I sat down and said, well, you know, why can't that work for the independent group? And so again, condensing here, but we really took all of those success systems that we had, the training, the support, the help, the motivation, and started building SMS as our, with those principles as our foundation.
Yeah, I always tell a very similar story, that the condensed version is we didn't know anything about running a brokerage or working with broker agents. We knew the Medicare market and we knew how to treat career agents, and nobody told us we were supposed to treat brokerage agents any different. So we never did. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the scale is different because you're working with, you know, thousands of agents versus 40 or 50 that are right in front of you. But the level of service and the level of compassion and care that we take with our agents is the same.
Yep.
Literally on both sides. So we didn't know they were supposed to be different or needed to be any different.
Well, just real quick, Joanne, one additional thing, whether it's a career agent, an independent agent, another thing that I think I learned through Zig Ziglar, Larry Barnes, Chuck Tantillo, and others. And you know, my favorite Zig Ziglar saying, it's on our wall there, is that you can get anything in life you want if you help enough other people get what they want. That is so true for anybody, but especially in what we do. And we always sit down. I can't tell you how many times you and I, Bobby, David, whoever, are sitting around the table making major decisions and setting goals. And it always came back to, how does this help the person, you know, that agent or that agency or that marketing company? We have to think about what's in it for them, not me. I'll be taken care of. You, Joanne, will be taken care of if we're helping enough other people. We can help them have success. So
Yep. I love that. Brian Adams talks about our industry being a win, 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 win.
Yeah.
And in so many either sales organizations or any business model at all, there's maybe somebody that's giving something that isn't getting as much. And in our industry, it's just not, it's a win, win, win for everybody. So as we kind of went through then as SMS was formed in 1995, we kicked it off, definitely grown just ridiculous amounts over the last however many years that is, I hate to count. Whew. And somewhere along the line, you decided that, well, walk us through kind of your decision. I think you had a goal to retire very early. Missed it by a little bit as far as the number, but definitely within the same decade, I think. Mm-hmm. Walk us through what that was like. What was the biggest transition for you? Because again, for everybody who doesn't know DM, was there a week that you weren't somewhere? I mean, either at an event, speaking somewhere, yeah, traveling, leading a group, leading a meeting, meeting with a carrier, meeting with a vendor. You know, all the things that we had to do as a company to get our company known out there and taking care of all the agents in both divisions to full-time now rancher, grandfather, husband, probably not traveling near at the pace that you were. When did you want? Like, what was your goal? And then how did you kind of make that transition happen? And what's been the hardest part of that?
When I was 23 years old, which is how old I was when I started in the business, and talking about Zig Ziglar, he had what back in those days would call a goal planner. Yeah. I think they call it the performance planner. Now I think many of our staff and leaders still use that as a way to set goals and track goals. And there's a sheet in there called the wild idea sheet. This is supposed to be something if this everything was, you know, you don't think about how you're going to do it or what's going to just wild idea. What would you like? And so I wrote down several. One of them was to be retired and financially independent by age 50. Through the years, I got to look at that sometimes. Why would I want to do that? I mean, this is, I'm having so much fun and this and that. But actually, in my memory now, you can correct me if sometimes we remember things differently. But in my mind, I remember sitting at my house in our office where we had you and many of our leaders meetings over there to get away from the office. And this would have been in 2009. And we were having our kickoff year, I believe. My memory is our kickoff meeting for the year. And I said, listen, guys, you know, we bought a place that we were in the process of building a place in Breckenridge. And I said, hey, I had a goal to retire at 50. I'm 54 now, and I'm not retiring, but I do want you to know I'm going to be spending more time working from Colorado. Still, you know, you got a phone and a computer and whatever you can and travel. So in my mind, that was kind of the beginning. I didn't know right then that, okay, now on, you know, September 1st or whenever I'm going to retire. But in my mind, it was that beginning of the process. Yeah. So it wasn't that going from 100 miles an hour to zero. So I was very fortunate in that. Then from 2009, I think as we went to 10, 11, 12, 13, you know, I tried anyway to be, to keep kind of pulling those reins back and which was very easy to do because I had Joanne Ray, Bobby Richardson, and David McNerney to do those things. So that was at age 54. The, if you will, kind of full retirement, I really don't even remember a day. I think I'm pretty sure it was somewhere in 2013.
Yeah.
Kind of went ahead and said, hey, I'm officially kind of announcing this. We sold our home, or we were in the process of selling our home in Columbia. And so that, whereas from 2009 to 13-ish, was more gradual, but I was still coming in and doing meetings and doing a lot of the travel and this and that. So that went pretty easy. And 13, where it was a little bit more of a walk away, that was a little tougher, you know, not because you didn't have, heck, things were going much better under the new leadership team with you and your partners. But yeah, that now, but luckily I had other interests in life, meaning my team roping, which some people on here probably don't even know what that is. You can Google it. It's a, an event, rodeo event, and this and that. So I picked back up on that, and I kept myself busy between team roping. When we're in the mountains, I like to mountain bike. Julie and I hike and do all of this. So there was that transition phase of having those things, and I still would keep in touch, you know, with you guys and come back for the occasional meeting. But and then the other thing I found out. Joking a little bit, but you used the terminology going from 100 miles an hour to slower. Sometimes I still to this day go, you know, Julie, this retirement, it's a lot of work. I think I'm going to go back to insurance. It wasn't as hard as this. Yeah.
Didn't have to work. It's not quite so physical.
You grew up on a farm, you know, when you're on a farm, ranch, whatever. There's always something to be done. So, I guess to summarize that, they're you know, when you've done something for 40 years, there's a bit of a transition. But if you have other interests and you ease into that transition, you can have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, I think if you ever do write a book, which we've tried to convince you over the years to do that, if you ever do, I think it's the perfect model in how to step away and ease into retirement. Again, very blessed, and not every industry or every career maybe could you do that, but if you were going to write a book about how to retire, I would say that you definitely did everything in the way that one should, and we should all have those kind of dreams, right? And I'm in that now, that phase of, you know, I'm trying to do my darndest to make sure that anywhere I go, I bring one of the young leaders with me, or if I don't need to be there, I send them, making sure that it's much more teaching now than leading. Which again, I learned from the best, and we all know as parents or leaders or whatever, we're always teaching, I guess. Sometimes we don't realize maybe that we are, but the blessing of having all these layers of these young leaders around here is just incredible. Yeah. And it's been a lot of fun to watch them kind of rise up, and now they're in the position that we were in a few years ago, or it seems like just a couple years ago. So I would say that, yes, you definitely did things in the right way. I definitely agree that in thinking about kind of taking that path myself, it is, what are you planning to do? Like, just not come into the office? Well, that's why. That's the fun part about all of this. So if retirement isn't, and we try not to use the word retirement of what's the next chapter. That's what my husband and I, we talk a lot about of, what do we want to do next? So this industry built up a beautiful life for us. Now, what do I want to do with that next? I think that's how I like looking at it, is not a retirement, because retirement sounds like the end of something. And I don't like endings. So I want to, I want to know what's next. So I would say in all of that, and I think you probably did answer it, but I asked several people before we got on of what do you want to hear from Dan? What would you want to know from Dan, whether they knew you or not? And one of the questions was, you know, what was the hardest part about that transition of whether it was gradual or not? There has to be a strange identity, not crisis, but a question of, you know, what is my goal here? Talk a little bit about Hokey Pokey maybe, and what you and Julie are doing there and the good that you're putting out to the world with that. You know, I think that's probably keeping you busy, I would assume.
Yes. And I'm going to go back for just a minute to something you said. You may have to remind me to come to that, but when you were just a moment or two ago talking about the young leaders that you have and molding them and grooming them. And of course I had that with Joanne, Bobby, David, you know, Chris, Dan Mangus, Clint, you know, Mary, Amy, everybody that played that role. It's so important to me what you said, and you have those same young leaders now. You can only accomplish so much by yourself. I mean, you can run a pretty big organization, but if you're the only one that kind of has those leadership ideas and the the setting the right. goals and the target of where you're going. You can do it and you can have good success, but the more, if you want unlimited, no lid success, then you find more and more people and you give more and more of that away. Even if I was good at doing this meeting or whatever, I can only do one meeting at a time. But if we can have other leaders that are doing that, the more leaders you have, it just exponentially increases what you can accomplish. So I'm saying, go ahead.
Yep. Sorry, no, before we leave that point, I remember you and I we finally came to the realization of, say you'd go to a carrier, you'd come up with an idea or something and would sit down and try to implement. And my comment back to you, I remember like it was yesterday, was, Dan, I just need you to paint the picture for me.
Yep.
I'll go find the paints. Yep. I'll figure out what color. I'll figure out who needs to be coloring where. Just paint the picture. What is your vision, in other words? But paint that picture for me, and then I'm going to run downstairs, and I'm going to go make it happen. But I think if you write a book, I'll write a book. And my book title would be I Got Out of the Way, because I think that's what I watch too many other leaders in all organizations, all types of industries. They're onto something. They build something really good, and then they don't get out of the way. They hire all these beautiful, smart, intelligent, creative people and don't get out of the way of letting them kind of rise everybody up the rest of the way. So I think, again, if I've been good at anything, I think I've been pretty good at still a work in progress, but making sure that we as leaders, like you said, there's only so many hours in a day, get out of the way and let these people come in and then paint a new picture every now and then for them to have the vision and then get out of the way.
I'm glad you reminded me of that. I remember that very, very well. And to me, it's like, oh yeah, wow. You know, I know what the picture is in my mind and shit, but then to be, as you just said, I don't want to repeat everything, but to be smart enough to get out, because, you know, let's face it, salespeople to be good, need to have a bit of an ego, need to have a bit of, I don't know if ego is the right word, but kind of a, I can do this on my own. I can come. And so it's hard to give up things. But, you know, I would just emphasize what you've said. The more you can train others to support you and help you and take your vision and go make it happen, you're going to have such better success by doing it that way.
And the key is finding the right people, not just a bunch of people.
And when you find them too, by the way, and you have your leadership team, I think this is an old Zig Ziglar thing, but that I tried to, didn't always do it perfectly, but tried to. But if something goes wrong, it's my fault. If something goes right, I want to recognize the leader that make that go right. So that's hard to do sometimes, but if you take responsibility for the failures and let others have recognition for the successes, that works.
And you were very good at that. You were very, very good at that. And I try to steal some of those one-liners that you always had. If something was printed incorrectly, you would always come to me and say, I must have stated this incorrectly. What you meant to say was, hey, idiot, you didn't type that right. Or that's not the word I was trying to say. But you always took that as, I must have not fill in the blank. Expressed myself, said what I meant to say, I didn't finish my sentence, didn't finish my thought, whatever, versus you didn't hear me or you didn't get something right. That's again a parenting 101 lesson as well. We've always talked those two things overlap a lot. And I think as parents, as leaders, as managers, to make sure that our kids, which I call them all my kids, are learning those lessons along the way. We don't even know we're teaching sometimes, right?
Yeah. And that's what you do.
Be careful. Yeah, they are watching. Yes.
Well, back to Hokey Pokey.
Tell everybody a little bit about that.
For those that don't know, when I fully retired and we sold the home in Columbia, we had our, if you will, vacation time up in Breckenridge, but we bought a little small ranch up in northern Colorado, just 10 miles south of Wyoming. And I was able to start reverting back to my childhood a little bit with the horses and roping and animals. And, you know, we've got 320 acres, which by Colorado size is not all that big because it's mostly sand and rock. But also there's, again, try to make it the short version, the Hokey Pokey has the facilities to the people that had it before. He was actually a minister and a psychologist, and they used it as a retreat for pastors to come away and lead church leaders to come away, spend time, work on their issues, whatever they might be. So we have taken, there's a we have a building called the Lodge, we have a guest house, and we have a bunkhouse. And we try to use those mostly through the summer months to help others. We have youth groups from some different churches, some in the Missouri, Columbia, Missouri area, some out in the Colorado area. We have some, excuse me, some church leaders that come out and have retreats and leaders meetings there. We've had some 12-step recovery type programs there. So what Julie and I try to do is kind of, its primary use is for our family and our friends and ourselves to just enjoy the land and hike and do the horses and this and that, but also to concentrate our time on making it available to others, making it a blessing to others as a place to get away and attend that retreat or attend that study group or whatever. So it's you know, nice because it's not full time. We're not tied to it, every single week, every single month, but it gives us a chance to, we've been blessed so much in our business and our lives to be able to try to share some of that back with others.
That's awesome. And I believe it's on Airbnb as well.
When we don't have the groups in, Julie, excuse me, my wife, Julie, is the kind of the manager of those properties. And many times we have the lodge and the guest house on Airbnb. So she keeps busy with that. By the way, I've been meaning to bring Julie's name up. I've mentioned her several times, but all the way back to several of the questions that you brought up and how did you do this and how did you balance family time and this and that and whatever. And sometimes I did pretty good. Sometimes I missed the mark and could have done better. But one of the most important thing on the family side was Julie's leadership. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it was ever an agreement that we sat down and talked about, but you know, my job was to be the leader on the business side of it, and her job, and we both helped each other, but she was the leader of the family part of it. So I wanted to give her the recognition that she should have.
Absolutely. Yeah, I could not have said that better. And the word balance gets thrown around a lot, especially to parents, probably more moms than dads, but to all parents, that word gets thrown around. And how do you balance? How do you have it all? And my answer to that is you don't set out to have it all, but you have it, what you have today. Here's what my plan is today. I'm going to balance today. If I started thinking, or if I allowed myself to go throughout, you know, their whole childhood when they were little or their whole adult life when they were grown in, you'd lose your mind and you would never be where you thought you were supposed to be. So to me, it was always that one day at a time. Today, I'm going to do this right. I'm going to be the best mom today. Tomorrow, I've got a big presentation and I'm going to be the best employee tomorrow. And the next day after that, I'm going to, you know, but you're absolutely right. It's, we talk about having a village, whether you're lucky enough, like we both are, to have the perfect spouse that was able to be that support system and to pick up where we left off and vice versa. Or you have your own village, whether it's the neighbor, the best friend, the mom, the dad, the sister, brother, whatever it is. I think it you cannot get out of this what you want to get out of this life alone in any way, shape, or form.
Real quick addition to that, too, when you're talking about, being there that day or whatever, I think again, it's probably a Zig Ziglar saying, but wherever you are, be there. If you're at work, but all you're thinking about is, I wish I was with my family, or I wish I was golfing or whatever. So you go golfing and you're going, I really should be at work. I mean, you're never satisfied where you are. If you're going to work, go to work and totally concentrate on that. So then the next day you can go to your family or your hobby or your, you know, whatever, wherever you are, be totally 110% there.
Yeah. I've got that written above my door as a reminder, because it's hard. That's where, when you're juggling and balancing and leading and whatever life, or, you know, whatever that means in your life, that's a hard thing to do. It's very easy to put up on a wall and read, but it's pretty hard to live it. So, well, as I knew we would, we've gone way over time again. So we're going to have part three now, Dan.
Well, can I know you're getting ready to wrap up.
Yes. Oh, please. Please wrap it up for us. Yep.
Julie, I've mentioned you're specific to SMS. What I'll speak to the crowd, but what SMS would not exist without Joanne Ray. And yes, we told the story about where I sat down with her and gave her the opportunity but definitely then said, hey, you know, here's what we need to do. Hey, I'm busy doing this other stuff. So Joanne has been a tremendous leader, as you all know, put together a tremendous team and has built a tremendous company. So hats off to you and thank you for that.
And you said that exactly the way I wrote it, Dan. Thank you. No, that was not planned. That was not part of the script at all. But thank you. That means the world to me, as you do, as you know. So we'll figure out how to get part three going next, Dan, because or just write the book.
There you go.
Just write that book and then people can learn all the good stories.
Yeah, well, this is the audio version of the book.
Oh, there you go. We'll start on the audio version. All right. Well, thanks, been a pleasure. Yep, been a pleasure. Thank you, Dan.
Appreciate you. Bye-bye. See y'all.
Bye-bye.